just right on cue. PUC Commissioner opened the Senate Revenue Committee for, this is Thursday. Welcome back, Senator George. It's nice to see you.
It's good to be here. And thank everyone. I've been treated so well here. I have now have a special chair to put my foot on.
Oh, did you really? Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, good. Kudos to Barbara and Paul for thinking of everything. Well, it's nice to see you, and you look great, and I hear you're feeling well.
Better.
So today we are, Commissioner Beyer has been working with the PUC staff for, probably over a year. You've had a lot of other things on your plate, but on first report and now recommendations on how we should treat utility income taxes. There's been a great deal of public discussion and private discussion and certainly discussion here in the building about this issue, and we're pleased. We know you took a good deal of time, Commissioner Beyer, in developing these recommendations that we have before us today, and thank you for the diligence and the time and effort that you put into preparing this information for us. And with that, Paul, do you have any comments before we just get rolling with the...
No, I don't, Mr. Chair. I've got the material that Mr. Beyer provided you and read that last night, but probably best to go ahead and let him start off.
Without further any ado, Commissioner Lee Beyer, please come up and deliver the PUC's recommendations on how the state should handle utility taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Lee Beyer, Chairman of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. And I'd ask at the start, just for your indulgence, I'm kind of getting over a cold, so if you
everybody
can't hear me, yell. If I don't hear you, you might have to yell, too.
We're very empathetic to that.
I understand that sort of the capital crud's been creeping around.
Huh? Thank you.
Good job, Barbara.
And, you know, Barbara's always taking care of this community.
Look at that, man.
Good memory. Well, Mr. Chair, as you noted, we've been working on this a long time, and you may recall that during the 2003 session when this first came up, I approached your committee as well as the House committee and said, y'all ought to do something about this. And since that time, we've spent a lot of time looking at it, and I will tell you that what I started out thinking was a very simple problem that you could fix very easily, or turns out to be much more complex. The materials that I provided to each of you yesterday, and you probably haven't a chance to go through them all, but I wanted you to have all of the information, you know, as an appendum to the white paper that we gave you a few weeks ago. Represents probably in excess of $20,000 of value in attorney's fees. All parties have responded and reviewed and provided the commission with their advice on the taxation issue. They responded to our white paper, and they also responded to a memorandum that we requested and received legal analysis from our attorney general in charge of the utility program. So you have the benefit of all of that in your packet, and it's a lot to read, and I'll tell you, as I discovered, it's very complex. So this morning, having considered all that, Tuesday, the commission took a position that, in terms of our recommendation to advise to you, and I should acknowledge up front that we sort of did a faux pas. In rush to meet your deadlines, we probably didn't adequately notice that, so we have some of our normal constituents who are not very happy with us on that. But I'm not sure that it would have made a difference because, as I say, they spent a lot of money making us aware and now you aware of their positions, and they'll certainly have the time to discuss that in front of you.
On your decision, was it a 3-0 decision, or did you take a formal vote?
Well, we do. That's the process. When we take a legislative position, we do that. In this case, it was a 2-0-1, one absent, me being absent because I was over here. But I had to advise them in advance, having seen what the recommendation coming out was, that I was supportive of where we ended up with it. So, in essence, you do have a unanimous recommendation from the commission on this. Let me also say, as I start into this, that there's been a lot of criticism in the press, and I suspect some from some legislators about how the taxes have been treated in the past. And I think that it's understandable that that's there. It took me a long time to understand how rate making is done. And it's not an easy, simple matter to consider. And there's perceptions of fairness. And certainly in this case, there's a perception that the system is not fair. But I will tell you that there is an awful lot that you could say to say the current system, the way we do it, is fair in a taxation sense, and it's good business practice and it's good economics. And probably the validity of that, although the way we've always done an argument doesn't necessarily hold a lot of favor, there is something to be said for the fact that the vast majority of the states, and I think it's all but about six, do it exactly the way Oregon has done it forever, if you will, on the standalone basis. And there's a lot of case law around that. System's not the only way you can do it, and that's why we're bringing you a recommendation, but there is a lot to be said for that. So you should start from that premise to understand that there's a historic reason. The other thing I'll tell you is that I would be... And you shouldn't be surprised if a lot of people follow me up today and afterwards and disagree. I suspect that the utility companies will completely disagree with our recommendation, and I suspect that many of the consumer advocates will disagree for a different reason. The utilities, because they think we're changing things that don't need to be changed, and the consumer groups that we're recommending, not enough. So you have that. All right, so let me move into it then. We are bringing you three specific recommendations. I'll just go through those and then discuss how we got there. First, we are recommending that the legislature change the tax law to require deconsolidation filings for state tax purposes. And that, secondly, we are suggesting that the are recommending that the legislature direct the commission in the taking process to consider the consolidated tax benefits on federal returns as we do rate making. And third, we are recommending that you require that utilities file a general rate case at least once every 5 years. Let me go into those then a little bit then. When we went into the background and looked upon this, I'd say we had a standalone system. And what we looked at in terms of the taxation is dealing with the perception that taxes were collected in rates as an expense and then not paid. The primary reason for that, quite frankly, is that we look at a utility as a standalone. I mean, we just look at the regulated utility and understand that each case is different, but you can have cases, as you did with PGE, where you had a utility that's owned by Enron and also had subsidiaries. We're just looking at the payment on that standalone basis, but when they file a consolidated return with the federal government for federal tax purposes and for state tax purposes then, because you attach to that, you're looking at the losses and gains from the whole bunch of corporations, and they offset each other. Often those offsets are because specific policies that Congress or the legislature set, such as the biggest one being accelerated depreciation, where you intentionally to try and create a good, invest in equipment quickly, give them a method to write down their taxes so that they'll do something good. There are other features like that. The pollution control law had an effect on the Trojan expenses for PGE, for example. So you have that. Obviously, the perception of that by the public is that that's unfair, that they are indeed paying an expense as part of their rates that's not collected. And so the question is, what are you going to do about that? And I think I would suggest that the legislature needs to approach that with sort of two hats in mind, if you will. One, you have to determine what are you trying to fix, if you're trying to fix anything. Are you trying to make sure that revenues within your control, within Oregon, that you're anticipating flow into the state treasury and into local governments like Multnomah County? That's one goal. The other one would be, are you trying to ensure that the expenses that are in rates for taxes that customers pay actually reflect taxes that get, so it's a customer benefit, a ratepayer benefit. So they're different. The effect of our recommendation on deconsolidation is that it would assure that the taxes that you anticipate, consistent with Oregon's policies, and irrespective of federal, will go into the state coffers. What it will not do, necessarily, is it will not assure that the taxes are the that those expenses and thus rates will be decreased. On a standalone basis, that the expenses in it are adequate or accurately reflect what it costs to run the utility. So I think you see the sort of the thermometer effect of that.
That tax liability just would not go to a subsidiary or...
Right. It wouldn't be passed through by deconsolidation. But that only deals... That recommendation can only deal with the state side of the issue. And it has a corresponding effect on local governments to do that. Specifically, one comes to mind is Multnomah County because they lean on the state system. So it would affect them, too. What the legislature cannot touch through your tax policies is the federal taxes. If you direct the deconsolidation, the companies would still have the right in following their federal taxes to consolidate for those purposes. So we can't touch those. That gets us to the second recommendation then. Excuse me. Where we're asking that you direct us to consider the benefits of taxation or the consolidation as we do rate making. And it's a slight departure from the standalone method. Essentially, what we would do is we would look at how the consolidated earnings or the consolidated taxes would impact the utility itself and make adjustments in the rate making purposes. That's not a perfect fit. And partially that's because federal law is fairly clear on that. That's what they call the benefits and burdens test, which says that you have to have a tie between the burden imposed on the ratepayer and the benefit received. So we have to tie that, and it's a proportionality to some thinking of what's the best example is it's your appropriation process for income taxes when you're trying to go across all states, trying to decide how much of a Nike's tax belongs to Oregon versus another state. It's that kind of an approach. The other piece to that is that to meet federal law, it would have to be symmetrical. And essentially what that means is that if the ratepayers have the opportunity to benefit from tax savings, they also would have to have the opportunity to be burdened by impact outside, you know, unexpected. Currently in the system, we don't do that, and the effect is that, as we talked about when we talked about the white paper, we create a test year, and we assume that it won't be right exactly every year, but over time, it'll do that balancing. This would add to that process a little bit and try to do that. The third recommendation, then, gets to the rate cases. Currently under a law, theoretically, the commission can ask a party or a utility to come in at any time. As a very practical matter, it doesn't work. What happens when a utility comes to us with asking for a rate case or rate adjustment is they carry the burden of proving that what they're asking for is the right approach. If we initiate it, the burden shifts to us, and we're in not as good of a system or a position to deal with that in a practical sense. Legally, we can do it. It's a practical matter. It's difficult to do. We've had, while some utilities, PacifiCorp, for example, is regularly in every 2 to 3 years, we've had some companies, smaller companies, some telecoms that have been out, you know, 10 years or more without that. Sort of the rule of thumb is if you're doing well under your existing rate, making more money than we would have put into rates, why would you come in? That's the theory on it. The other piece, though, what's probably more importantly, is if you direct us to implement the second piece is to meet the federal test for symmetry and consistency. We probably, because we'd be looking back, essentially you'd be looking back saying, you know, what were the taxes paid over the last, you know, 2 to 5 years or some period of time. You would want to be looking at that in a fairly regular basis to meet that fairness doctrine. So that brings that up to that.
So, Commissioner Beyer?
Yes.
So, on number two, just wondering, and you may not know the direct answer to this, but as you guys were exploring question number or recommendation number two, did you go back to a few test years, 5 or 6 years back? I mean, the PG Enron case is such a celebrated case and so much in the news, and just wondering, and I'm sure it occurred, that the commission went back for 5 or 6 years and took some test cases to see what, in fact, and I don't know the proprietary information, that if you had it from the Department of Revenue, of what the taxes paid to the state treasury were, if you had access to that information. But it'd be interesting, if you did, to kind of at least model that with...
Mr. Chair, I would tell you that we've been doing this on a theoretical basis, not on an actual modeling, and so the answer to that is no, we have not done that. I don't know...
Maybe did we? Conceptually,
I'm turning to Lise Barling, our utility director, who may have an off-the-cuff answer, but I sure don't.
Chairman Deckert, members of the committee, my name is Lise Barling. I'm director of utility program at the commission. One example we did talk about with the parties in one of the workshops we held has to do with a situation you may be familiar with, and that is the case where if TPG had acquired Portland General Electric and Oregon Electric was running Portland General Electric, there was this issue of the debt of Oregon Electric and its ability to take PGE's taxable income and offset that with its, that is, Oregon Electric's debt payments, debt costs, interest costs, which would have yielded, I think the number was $15 million in tax savings that Oregon Electric would have enjoyed in some sense at the expense of PGE. That was one of the concerns raised in the case. In the discussions we had about how this approach described in number two would work revolved around whether under number two, recommendation number two, the commission would be able to take some of that $15 million benefit and return it to customers. The parties were unsure how it would work. In a rate case, we would debate it. It was really a matter of whether customers are in some way, PGE customers, would have been responsible for that Oregon Electric debt. One point of view was that, well, the only money that's available to pay off that debt is coming from PGE customers, so in that sense, they are responsible. They ought to get the $15 million benefit. The other point of view on that is that, well, no, technically, customers aren't responsible for that Oregon Electric debt. Oregon Electric is. If Oregon Electric defaults, that doesn't come back to customers directly. So there's no clear answer to how that $15 million would have been handled, that kind of example. People kind of left it where it was and agreed that under number two, we would be debating in a rate case what the level of customer responsibility for that for the Oregon Electric debt was, and therefore how much of that $15 million benefit they're entitled to.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, and Mr. Chair, then finally, one of the suggestions that has been made in various discussions on this in different proceedings was the idea of an annual true-up where we look at the taxes and do a forward-looking rate adjustment. We strongly recommend that the legislature not seriously consider that, and for a couple of reasons. One, as a practical matter, we don't think we can do it. It's just a matter of we don't have the access to the information. It's not timely, and there's some countervailing of forces that would work. You could have a bad year where you have a forecasting rate increase that's followed by an up year, and you make the situation even worse. probably doesn't meet the symmetry test required by federal law. And probably the biggest obstacle is there is a provision in the IRS code specifically dealing with the accelerated depreciation that could trigger a repayment significant number to the company would have to repay, and it could be very harmful to both company and to ratepayers to have to do that. It would deprive some balancing returns in that. So that's kind of my
But it's just, in general, that's the piece. We don't think that works very well. So.
And how does Pennsylvania, I mean, we don't have to go into any depth, but somehow they found a way to wiggle around the IRS code and the symmetry argument.
Pennsylvania actually does something that's very close to our second recommendation.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, as we understand the Pennsylvania situation, they have worked very hard to make sure that they don't run afoul of any of the IRS requirements. In particular, the Pennsylvania method takes some of the losses elsewhere in the corporation. It kind of divides them up among the utility and some of the other subsidiaries that were profitable. So the utility gets a share of those losses. But the way they've done it, they've made sure that to the extent there are regulated activities elsewhere in the corporation, maybe a utility in another state, for example, that they don't take any of those losses because in doing that, that's where they run afoul of the IRS.
I guess, Mr. Chair, in fairness to also say that you're well aware of the process that is a state agency. We're required to follow the advice of the Attorney General on this stuff. And I will tell you that while there are different legal opinions, and you can see those in the papers, our attorney strongly believes that Pennsylvania is probably in violation of the federal law. Mm-hmm. And if challenged, probably would lose. Although that's a strong difference of opinion. Certainly the Pennsylvania Commission is following the direction of their state courts. So
mm-hmm.
One of the things I've learned over this is, boy, there's a lot of differences of legal opinions on it. Be happy to respond to any other questions you have. And I guess I should add one more note that I would caution from my experience on your side is in terms of which utilities might apply, and you probably ought to direct this to the Department of Revenue and maybe to the Legislative Council. Is there some discussion and differences of opinion and the legal voices that we've heard that suggests how finely you can cut this out? Can you apply it just to energy companies? Do you have to apply it to all regulated utilities? Can you apply it just to electrical companies? Not sure the answer to that. I think it gets at the constitutional questions of fair treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably something, if you choose to deal with this, that you at least want to explore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Beyer, if I could do this before we open it up to questions, because most of this panel was not on the interim panel that at least met with you on this issue. And so, Paul, I know you've only had this for a night, but if you could just walk us through the mechanics of if we adopted recommendation 1 and recommendation, 2 and 3, although 3 is obviously not near as germane to the work that we do here, but 1 and 2, just what would be the mechanics of, and without giving it a name, utility X, here would be the change in how Oregon relates to this utility in corporate income tax treatment.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, my understanding of this would be that as you... you know, of course, any corporation under our current law must file under a consolidated return if they're part of a larger entity, and that, of course, is done as you've heard testimony in the past. That's done to avoid spreading losses or costs across different states to minimize tax burden. So that's been the state policy in terms of corporate income tax returns for some time. What this would do is require a calculation really pretty similar to what was presented in the white paper, in which you would look at the individual subsidiary and the utility operating in Oregon and go through and they would have to file what their gross receipts are that are attributed to that individual entity, and then they would have to estimate their cost. There may be some issues around if there would be a cost that would be spread over the larger parent, for example. But they would estimate those costs and then come down to a calculation of what net income would be attributable to that particular subsidiary. Then that would therefore become the tax base and apply the state's corporate income tax rate to that. And then after that, adjust for whatever corporate credits would be applicable. So we do, of course, have a lot of corporations who file as independent standalone corporations who don't have subsidiaries. So that would be the goal. My understanding would be to try to get that type of calculation for the subsidiary itself. So as if it were a standalone entity, just as the calculation's done in the rate making.
And then recommendation number two.
Recommendation number two to me would be a little bit would be less clear. Really, you're looking at a different tax burden at the federal level than you are at the state level, because you're filing under as a different entity as part of the parent's income tax return. So that would require, I think, and I think you've already had testimony this morning, would require some evaluation in terms of which of these costs can be actually attributed back to Oregon. You would have to have this kind of this match with the benefit burden match that the AG talks about in the material that the commissioners provided you. So I think that would require a little bit of subtlety and some discussion within the commission on how to calculate that. I wouldn't see that as a straightforward calculation.
Sure. Questions or comments for Commissioner Beyer or staff? Senator Brzezinski.
I just want to follow up with Commissioner Beyer said about the how the people would be treated and what might be constitutional and stuff like that. It would seem to me from my memory and on those type of issues, if everyone in like designated or specific class is treated the same, then you shouldn't have the conflict. And so if, and I'm not saying we should go here, but just based on what I've heard, if there was a decision to treat different components of those within the regulated utility industry differently, so long as everyone in that class is treated the same, it seems like we wouldn't have a problem as compared to if you did a separation of power, electric, gas. It would seem that would be okay. But I don't do utility law, so maybe there's something unique, but I always have heard that it's basically equal protection and maintaining due process for those that are within the same class.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, I think you're hitting at the core of the issue and where my discomfort comes in, and probably Paul can answer this better than I. I'm not the attorney you are. But the issue is, it's really not a utility issue. It's a tax fairness issue and treatment, and it's the definition of what is that class and is it a discrete class or not. You know, can you distinguish between utilities? Probably easier with energy companies than it is, say, with telecommunications. You get into telecommunications and you're going to get issues about the ones that we rate regulate versus the competitive providers, and are you treating them differently or not. But you're moving very quickly outside of any area of expertise that I have, if I have any.
Yes, sir.
If I can just follow up very briefly on that. That issue was addressed in some comments filed in particular by PacifiCorp on March 4th, and I point you to page 4 of those comments where they identify the potential constitutional issues that separating out electric utilities or perhaps energy or just regulated utilities might create.
Yeah, please, Senator George.
Commissioner Beyer, if I understood you correctly when you began, you said that currently we're very similar to most other states, considered to be fair and balanced process. So I'm going to assume that's correct, and then we're going to move into a brand new realm. And let's say, for example, that I'm a utility, and all of a sudden, because of deconsolidation or any other thing that may happen because of these three components, you're going to cost me more money. I'm going to end up with a total cost because I couldn't shift them or equalize them with operations I might have in other states. Can I legitimately come back to you as an Oregon utility and say, I have these additional costs, and your obligation will be, in fact, allow me to recover, which will be at the expense of the ratepayer?
Chairman Decker, Senator George, it's a little different than that. If I understand what you're saying, the argument that's there is on a standalone basis, we essentially go through and decide, you know, gain agreement in the process, what the legitimate cost and profits, you know, opportunity to earn a return are in the company, and then you apply the tax rates against that. I'm oversimplifying a little bit, but that's essentially it. The argument that many critics have made is that we're within that rate that we set, there's an assumption that all of those taxes would be paid. And the case that's been argued, obviously, in the papers over the last couple of years, the Enron PGE example, is PGE, in fact, collected that amount of money for taxes, paid it, and we validated that, paid it to their parent in most of the years, but because of offsets elsewhere in the Enron Corporation, they effectively paid little or no taxes to Oregon or the federal authorities, or I guess most recently reported to Multnomah County. So to direct answer to your question, I don't think you would be increasing the cost for the company, although you may be decreasing the amount of revenue or retained earnings that they're allowed to keep. So it's within that, it's the questions that's been raised is a relative fairness to the ratepayers.
Is that
please.
Is it your estimate based upon the assumption that these would pass, these adjustments, these a new way of calculating, that in fact the state would net more money?
Mr. Chair, Representative George, I think in the case that I just talked about, the answer would be yes. But I frankly have not looked across the board. This has been more of a theoretic basis.
Okay. Thanks.
Other questions or thoughts? What did you, as you guys were examining this, what were the downsides? Lee, you served in the legislature, so you know the economic development arguments and are very familiar with those. Do you see a downside to Oregon? Did y'all discuss what would be the downsides to going to a deconsolidated tax return for utilities?
Mr. Chair, I understand your question. I'm not exactly sure that. I'm sort of reminded of a discussion I have with our council and others that have said it's in the rate setting process, it's a little bit like grabbing hold of a balloon. Mm-hmm. You may get the cost here and it may pop out there, a demand for higher return on equity. Remember, in the regulatory process, what we're directed to do by the major court decision is called the Hope decision. And in fact, I believe it's 1999, put that in state law. That's the standard that the legislature set. Basically, what it says is utilities have a right to have the opportunity to earn a reasonable return on their investment. And that's across the whole range. And what Hope says is that you can make adjustments among all the calculations, but as long as the net effect is that they get that. So I'm not exactly sure how it would impact on that. Some would argue, and I think the argument from those who criticize the current system is that effectively by allowing sort of this tax protection by subsidiaries and outside interests, that effectively utilities have the opportunity to earn more than their approved rate of return.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the argument.
I guess, and this is more of a question. I mean, in many ways, it's our question, not because we're given that these are recommendations and we are called upon to act upon them. But we're always, and if you care to comment, do. If not, that's fine too. We're always hopeful that we can keep parent companies in Oregon with all the ancillary activity of law firms and accounting firms and all the other good that comes from that. And so that'll be a question that I think we at least have to debate amongst ourselves on this. And if you care to to offer an opinion if you think recommendation one or two, but one would have any bearing on that or in your...
Say that again, your question.
We will, I think, undoubtedly hear, or I would guess, we'll want to discuss, if we adopted recommendation one, would folks who've made their parent company, utilities who made their parent company here in Oregon, but have operations in other states, and size of the pie questions of how many customers they have in Oregon versus customers in other states, would this be a disincentive to continue headquartering here in Oregon for those utilities?
Mr. Chair, I don't see why it would impact that. You may hear arguments, but I can't understand why that would be the case. Because you're only talking about their Oregon share anyway.
Mm-hmm. And
for a multi-state serving entity, it creates some problems, but every time, you know, the 50 legislatures meet, you're creating problems for multi-state entities. I mean, it's just the reality of operating in a number of states. So I don't see that. I think the real issue for you all to decide is one of, you know, I think your constituents expect you to deal in fairness and whether you think the current approach is fair or not. Certainly you've heard a lot that there's perceptions that it's not. I think it's a judgment call, but I guess I will say that's why you get paid the low bucks.
No, it's something certainly I think every one of us has heard from citizens is why I'm embedded in my rates is taxes that go to my beloved utility and then those never effectuate themselves in treasuries, whether that's locally, state, or federal. It's one that we are probably, I would say, somewhat universally familiar with having to answer that question.
Well, I would suggest, Mr. Chair, that this is almost an extension of your tax expenditure discussions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reason people have those feelings a lot is because Congress and legislatures have chosen for legitimate public purpose reasons to incent certain actions by businesses, and you're seeing the results of some of that here in terms of the treatment. I mean, that's really what causes it. And so it's a call. In some ways, by totally, like a true-up, for example, you'd be totally reversing other policy decisions you had made.
Mm-hmm.
By doing that. So it's a balancing test, but I think that's the legitimate job of the legislature. You make these decisions every day. Are they anti-business? I suspect not, but you certainly will hear that, and you're going to hear different perspectives, and that's okay. That's why you're here.
Well, we appreciate your help in guiding us, Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lee, and I know you're not feeling well. I'll try not to ask you questions that take a long response. But a couple of things. I think the chair's question about whether this would incent or not incent headquartered, I mean, certainly that has not been a factor now because they're not, except for maybe one exception. I mean, you've got Scottish Power is not headquartered now under the current system. Enron and PG&E, if you go to other utilities, Quest or Verizon, you know, they're not headquartered here anyway, so I don't see that as the issue. But you brought up something that I thought was interesting, and just if you could just touch on that again, and that is the rate of return, the return on equity, that when someone comes for a rate case for you, as you mentioned, there are all these different components, and you decide, you know, what that range will be, and how to calculate to ensure, you know, that return on equity. So even if with the deconsolidated return it was in effect and you're doing a rate case, you're going to determine whatever that range is of return that you think is adequate. And even if taxes did not exist, you would still be determining what that range was, and it would be might be other factors that you would weight differently to still come up with the same rate of return that you think is appropriate for that utility. The only difference would be, as I see it, would be whether you felt that those elements that you were including in making that rate adjustment, you know, were the appropriate ones. Is that... is that pretty well... because it's not like you're going to... Gee, if we don't have taxes, and I've been counting on that as part of my income, that all of a sudden it's necessarily going to be reduced because you would weight things differently, I would imagine, if there was no taxes even involved in this.
Chair Deckert, Senator Metzger, First, let's distinguish between the first two recommendations. The first recommendation isn't going to change anything directly in our rate making. It's affecting, as Chairman Beyer said, it's affecting what actually gets paid into the state coffers and the local jurisdictions. It's the second recommendation where we would take into account the consolidated tax benefits potentially for Oregon customers. That's where we would consider these effects. And on the face of it, it's not clear that there would be any effect on ROE. We would simply be, in addition to the usual tax calculation, we would be looking to see whether there are any benefits, tax benefits, that we would pull into the calculation of overall rates as a separate adjustment, a separate factor. And on the face of it, I don't see that there would be any change in the range of returns on equity that we would consider for the purposes of setting rates.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions or comments for Chairman Beyer and his able staff? Well, thank you. This has been a journey that we've taken with you, and we've really appreciated how you've kept us informed and really taken the amount of time that you needed, and hopefully weren't rushed, the amount of time you needed to come up with a solution that you felt was worthy of the time you spent on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are obviously available. If the committee decides that you wish to pursue legislation, we're there to help try to craft that. So it makes sense to work.
Well, I think Senator Metzger wishes to pursue.
I think it's crafted.
You just have to tell me which committee.
Well, right now it looks like it's going to bounce to both. So it's in Senate business today at Thursday at 1. We're going to have a hearing, I believe, on this issue. And it looks like it would come here and following the work that Senator Metzger, Chair Metzger, and I serve on that committee. We'll be looking at what today at 1.
Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone, you'll have your chance today at 1, but would anyone like to testify on the PUC's recommendations? There will be plenty of public hearings on this issue in the coming days. Thank you. We are adjourned, and what, Friday we have no other than one poor committee. The Senate is off for Friday, so we will return to work Monday at 8:30. We close the informational hearing and we stand adjourned.
I understand there's an injunction coming.